And I had a young woman that worked for me by the name of Anne Bradley, who was originally from Enid. She now lives in Paris and graduated Georgetown University Law School and has two children and husband and so forth. But at that time, she had worked with me off and on as my assistant, and I had brought her into the case as a kind of a minister without portfolio. And the reason that I had done that was because, A, I trusted her, and B, she was a good writer, and C, she had a remarkable ability to analyze people and situations. Really first-class analytical skills. So one day I called her in my office, and I said, I have a project for you. I told her this story. I said, when I was an undergraduate at the University of Texas, I majored in English. I had this class entitled Southern Literature, which was fascinating. And one day, the instructor told us that he was going to discuss the new critics and the new criticism. So he explained that the new criticism was really founded by T.S. Eliot, but that it had become an accepted canon of literary criticism by the work of John Crow Ransom and Alan Tate and Robert Penn Warren and others, Clinoth Brooke. Southerners called themselves the Fugitives and the Agrarians, and I knew Robert Penn Warren's works, and I thought All the King's Men was a great novel. I'd read it many times, seen the movie many times. And his lecture that afternoon in the spring of 1961 absolutely captivated me. And I remembered it. I remember it to this day. And he said that the theory of the new criticism was that you don't read or study the author's biography or the life and times or any of that, that if you want to know what a poem or play or a story means, you study the text. The meaning is derived from the text, close textual reading. I said, so what I would like for you to do is go in there to the safe and get all of the memoranda of our conversation with Tim McVeigh, all of the transcripts, and I would like for you as much as possible to forget everything you know about the Oklahoma City bombing and give me a memorandum on whether our client is lying to us or not and develop his personality and an alternative theory that the facts may suggest based nothing more than on what he said. Close textual criticism, close reading of the text. And I was satisfied she had the intellectual equipment to do it. She came back maybe 3 weeks later. She'd worked on it full time. She gave me two memoranda about 16 pages long, single space, blue papers, I recall, typed. And she said, I think this may be what you want. I glanced at them, went over to my apartment in Denver, and I read them and reread them and probably read them four or five times. And I thought, my God, this is it. Called the warden and said I wanted to see Tim McVeigh the next day. And that's when he and I had the conversation that I alluded to earlier in our interview about these three men. After Anne had gone through all of the memoranda of conversations and his wording, on the last page of one of the memos, she said, if what our client says is true, the following people saw him. And she listed seven people. And I simply took the first, the second, and the fourth. I've forgotten now who the third was. Maybe I simply took them because they were easy to make the point. And as I thought about it, I thought, well, of course, that's right. So when I confronted him, it's not that I knew what had happened. I knew what hadn't happened. From that shock of recognition, as Edmund Wilson would say, I began to think of the bombing in a whole different way. I called in Rob Nye one day, and we were talking, and we were making such good efforts in defending Tim. I mean, we really were. It was going our way. And I said, let me tell you something, partner. These four people, the government's going to have to change two of them. They're going to have to change their story to convict our client. It doesn't make any difference which of the two, but two of them have to do it. Because as it is, despite all of this newspaper publicity, they don't have it. And sure enough, two of them changed their story. Unfortunately, that wasn't what Tim McVeigh wanted to hear, because it was a zero-sum game. To diminish Tim McVeigh's role was to enlarge the role of others, and he didn't want others enlarged. He was protecting the others. That's the famous leak that he authorized me to make to the media. That's the reason that he did those 75 hours of interviews. That's the reason why he attracted all of the anger and hatred toward himself. It was a shield to the others. And there's no more classic example of that than two things. When I told him that I thought early on that Mike Tiger might acquit Terry Nichols, he said, good, then the revolution can continue.